beasts fanned out across the purple terrain, capturing Roots and his friends and turning them into orbs. As far as Roots knew, it was the only surviving member of its species. Noble's eyes opened, and he drew in a long gasp of air. He was back in the belly of the drone and looking at Roots, who had retracted its arms now. An overwhelming sadness rushed over Noble at the sight of the ancient plant in front of him. It had lost everything. Family. Friends. Home. Just like Noble. Roots reached back out with an arm, and Noble reared back this time, afraid to see more of the painful images. They were so real, so vivid. But he had to trust his friend, just as he'd asked the alien to trust him. He cautiously held up his finger. He connected once more with one of the sponge tips. This time Roots entered his mind, consuming his memories. They flashed across his vision, his youth, his time at the Naval Academy, his first commission with the NTC, his wife, the births of their daughters, and finally the invasion of organics. Noble's finger dropped away from Root's sponge. Tears streaked down Noble's face. The alien let out another cackle and then moved forward on its wormy arms until it was so close to Noble he could see the pores on its torso. He assumed the gesture was meant to comfort him, or maybe to comfort the alien. The drone slowed as it approached the cruisers. Doors opened in the side of the closest ship, allowing drones inside the hangar. Roots let out a cackle, and Noble replied, "We're going to fight them, buddy. Mark my words, we're going to fight." To his surprise, Roots acknowledged the statement with a nod of its slimy bulb head. "Where are you taking us?" Athena asked. After 15 minutes of descending deep beneath the military base, she decided it was time to ask some questions. The old Hispanic man wearing the trench coat pulled off his breathing mask and stopped in the center of the tunnel. The beam from his flashlight hit Athena in the visor of her helmet, nearly blinding her for a moment. "Not much farther now," he said. "Where's the bunker?" Griffin asked. The beam flitted away from Athena, hitting Griffin next.
"Bunker? Ain't no bunker here anymore."
The man turned and motioned the kids escorting them to keep moving.
"Hold on just a damn minute," Athena said. She pulled off her helmet. "I'm not going a step farther until you tell us who you are and where you're taking us."
Griffin bobbed his helmet.
"You heard the lady. Tell us."
The old man chuckled.
"Suit yourself,"
he said, continuing down the passage with the kids following close behind. One of them stopped. A young boy, maybe 10 years old, holding a rifle way too big for him.
"You better follow us."
"Who are you, lady?"
asked another one of the kids, a girl not older than 9.
"I'm Corporal Athena Rollins of the NTC Ghost of Atlantis," Athena replied. "We're here to help you, but you need to answer a few questions before we go any farther."
The old man stopped, twisting one ear and one eye in her direction. He pulled a strand of white hair slick with sweat from his weathered brown forehead. Griffin cradled his helmet in the crutch of his arm and moved next to Athena, a show of support.
"We were told you are resistance fighters," he said in his deep voice. "Call me Santiago."
Several of the kids were still pointing weapons at Athena and her team.
"How about you tell them to lower their rifles?" Athena suggested.
The man shook his head.
"I don't think so, Corporal. I don't know you."
A young man in his early 20s pulled off a breathing apparatus covering a lightly bearded face.
"You're here to help us?" he asked.
Athena nodded.
"Our NTC AI contact, Alexia, said you were hiding here, and told us this was our best shot to link up with another group of survivors. She's working on getting us off the planet."
Santiago laughed even harder this time, bending over to slap a knee.
"Off the planet, she says."
"This guy crazy or what?" Griffin whispered. Several of the kids also laughed. Athena remained stone-faced.
I've been here since day one, and I can tell you there is no way off the planet. Not here, at least, Santiago said. The aliens destroyed every aircraft within minutes of the invasion. I'm sure you saw the debris field out there. That's what our military looks like now. The bunker is destroyed, too. That's why we're hiding in the sewers like rats.
So you're not NTC? Athena asked.
I'm all that's left, said the young bearded man. He reached out with a gloved hand.
You're a soldier? She asked, shaking his hand.
Yes, the only survivor of Pelican. My name's Theron, Staff Sergeant Theron Corey.
Nice to meet you, Staff Sergeant, she said.
Likewise.
Athena looked back to Santiago. Alexia said she has a plan for us, and I trust her.
That makes one of us, Santiago replied. I don't trust anyone, especially not a computer, so why don't we keep moving?
He paused, staring hard at Athena.
We can chat later.
Athena motioned for her team to continue. She drew in long breaths of unfiltered air. It was still steaming hot down here, but noticeably cooler than at the surface. They followed the kids and their two adult leaders down the tunnel. Several more passages led them into an amphitheater that had once been some sort of central draining area. Fans blew air on the occupants of the space. Over the rush of wind came coughs and sobbing. Griffin stopped next to her to look at the cavern. Several candles burned on sconces set high on the concrete walls. The light illuminated dozens of cots along the eastern wall, where two women and 20-plus young kids were sitting. Santiago raised a hand, waving. One of the women stood, placing her hand protectively on a small girl's shoulder.
"More kids?" Griffin asked.
"Who are you people?" Athena asked Santiago. He turned and shrugged.
"I'm just a retired police officer-turned-school bus driver. We were on a field trip to visit the base during the invasion. This here is Miss Walsh and Miss Gibson, both teachers."
Both women raised hands.
"Staff Sergeant Corey brought us down here to hide during the attack," Santiago said. "We owe him our lives."
Athena gave Griffin a side glance. Trish, Malone, and Taylor all stepped up next to her to examine the survivors of Pelican Air Force Base. The group consisted of a cynical old retired police officer, a couple of sick teachers, a single NTC grunt, and a bunch of kids playing soldier. These were the resistance fighters Alexia had promised would help them escape the planet?
Chapter 20 Entry 10208, Designee AI Alexia. My scans have picked up organic nanotechnology inside the biosphere. Sensors 41 and 42 have just picked up four of the mechanical balls moving through a decommissioned section of Cheyenne Mountain. I've sealed off every access tunnel, passage, crack, and cranny over the past few months using my robots. Now those bots are moving into position to make sure the defenses hold. One of them, the disc-shaped robot designated JPP-1, was designed for cleaning purposes. I've upgraded the bot significantly. It is now a vacuum cleaner turned bomb. JPP-1 takes up position in a 1x1-foot air duct, waiting for its new mission. The motion detectors in this vent pick up four organic spheres moving through the passage. JPP-2 and JPP-3 are also moving to engage the alien nanotechnology. I send a signal to JPP-1, an order that will terminate the robot. An instant explosion rips through the vent where JPP-1 has halted. Flames rage across the mangled metal bulkheads and the debris of JPP-1. Smoke swirls across the destruction. I wait for it to clear. The motion sensors no longer detect movement, and when the smoke disperses, I see the alien nanotechnology is smoldering. I feel what humans might describe as satisfaction, but there's no time to waste on human emotions. Sensors in Section 15 of the facility pick up more movement in the ventilation shafts right above the destroyed biosphere farm. I switch to that feed. Another five of the spheres are moving through the tunnels. Multiple sensors alert me to movement in... Wait. I check the feed in the air duct JPP-1 just blew up. Movement slices through the smoke. The spheres have transformed into disks in order to negotiate the twisted metal. This changes things. If I can't blow them up, I'll be forced to permanently shut down before they can tap into my system. The organics cannot be allowed to get hold of my hard drive. Doing so will put every surviving group in jeopardy. It's not over yet, however, as humans would say. I still have tricks up my sleeve. The first is YK-8, another robot retrofitted out of parts from the medical ward. The body consists of a stainless steel box and two mechanical arms, one with a grabbing claw, the other with a hydraulic pincer. It moves on a continuous track system like a tank, and has an advanced optical system that was previously used for medical scans and procedures. JPP-1 helped build this device a few months ago, and I've been tweaking it ever since. I may not have a body, but the two mechanical arms YK-8 sports will serve as my own. The robot rolls across the dry soil of the farm, crushing roots and stems beneath its tracks. I direct it to stand right beneath the air duct panels. The grates pop off and three of the five organic nanotech spheres drop to the dirt, where they too transform into disks. Reaching out with the two arms, YK-8 drives toward the three disks. The grabbing claw and hydraulic pincer grab one of the disks. The top of the metal box opens and a third arm with a sub-electronic converter emerges. This is the same device Dr. Sophie Winston used in medical experiments some months ago to tap into her dreams. I will use the converter to hack into the alien nanotechnology. I have no idea if it will work, but I am anxious to try. Commander Suzuki had planned to use something similar and never had the opportunity. The organic disk vibrates in the grip of YK-8, but the other two disks appear focused on finding a way into the facility. Both of them reform into spheres and glow a bright red. Seconds later, they roll to the door and melt their way through. They have their own tricks, I see. YK-8 blasts the capture disk with a shock of electricity and then taps the disk with the converter extension. Data flashes through my system. I begin the hard part, hacking into the organic network using the nanotechnology as my gateway. I do not anticipate taking long to hack my way in, but the two spheres have already melted through the door and are continuing on. Four more have dropped from vents and are racing through the mess hall. Another three have made their way into the living quarters. I don't have much time. The one thing I have to guide me is the schematic Commander Suzuki sent me of the shark the night of his death. The data I gathered from the blueprints has given me a window into how organic operating systems are set up. I'm into the system a moment later. The view is marvelous. Several seconds pass, then an entire minute. I've spent that time searching the most advanced computational architecture I've ever seen in my entire life. In some ways, the organic system mimics a human brain. Everything is connected. Through it, I can even access the organic network that connects these individual pieces of technology. I know I won't have long before they detect me and shut me out, but I don't need long to do what I've been planning. Sensors flash warning me the nanobots are making their way deeper through the biosphere. Three have already found the entrance to the storage area where my systems are housed. The hard drive isn't far. Now I know what it's like for the human race. Time is running out, and the only hope rests in the operating system of a tiny robot. I send a final order to YK-8. Another jolt of electricity comes from the sub-electronic converter impregnating the organic disk with my final trick. I hope the organics enjoy the virus I just uploaded. End entry.
Emmanuel slipped his hand into Sophie's. They sat next to each other on a sleek transport ship, just like the one they'd discovered in the Shakundo Kasu's vehicle hold. One of Hoffman's humanoid companions piloted the vessel. They swept low over the Martian landscape. A host of other transport ships followed them. These held the remaining spiders and sentinels that had nearly killed Sophie and the others. They'd had no choice but to follow Hoffman or face immediate death. "Why did you try to kill us?" Emmanuel asked. Hoffman, or at least the alien that looked like Hoffman, appeared to offer a sad grin. Emmanuel still couldn't decide if this was some strange biomimicry, or if it really was Hoffman that had been manipulated and molded into the abomination that walked before them now. As a biologist, he marveled at what scientific advancements would be necessary to alter a person's physiology into what appeared to be a completely different life form. As a human being, it repulsed him.
I didn't try to kill you, Hoffman said. You fought the organics, and they tried to kill you. You should be thanking Sophie, though. She's the only reason you're still alive. I noticed you tried to destroy some of the nanobots in her. Thankfully, you didn't succeed. Those bots are still attuned to the organic network. I think, if I recall correctly, you and Captain Noble were calling the energy waves the organics use in their network the surge when you tried to destroy the relay pylons. In any case, the bots in Sophie are every bit as organic as any of the spiders, or...
He used a clawed hand to indicate himself.
Me?
How the hell do you know about Noble and what we were doing on Earth? Balma asked.
Decrypting non-integrated human technology is easy enough when you have the advantages we do now, Hoffman said. Even as corrupted and failing as Sonya was, it wasn't difficult to recover and restore all the data you brought aboard the Sunspot.
Non-integrated? Sophie narrowed her eyes at Hoffman. What's that supposed to mean?
This is what we've been doing, Hoffman said, integrating humanity with the organics.
Emmanuel felt Sophie deflate next to him. They had come to Mars expecting humanity to be scrabbling for a foothold in their little corner of the galaxy. Maybe it was crazy, but that's what had kept Emmanuel alive. But now it seemed like Hoffman was rolling over on his back and letting the organics tread all over him and the rest of human civilization, as if they hadn't taken enough already. "You're selling us out to the organics," Emmanuel said. "We fought for our lives in that biosphere. You tricked us into believing we were running some grand experiment. Then you fooled us into believing you were trying to save humanity, that your intentions had been noble all along, that you were going to ensure we had a future free of organics." Hoffman frowned. Or at least that's what Emmanuel assumed he was doing. The crustacean features of his face didn't offer the same breadth of emotion Emmanuel was used to.
"Did I promise you all that?" Hoffman asked. "Or is that what you assumed? Is that what you tried to read between the lines?"
One of the humanoids at the front of the aircraft scoffed. Hoffman scowled at the humanoid before turning back to Emmanuel.
"Everything I did for the future of us."
Hoffman pointed to Sophie and the rest of the crew, then at the two children nestled into their seats at the rear.
"I'm a scientist, and I worked with some of the best minds Earth had to offer. I knew all the smartest people, the most successful people. I don't say this to brag. I say this because I had my pulse on what humans could feasibly accomplish. When I learned the organics were coming for Earth, I quickly saw that humanity didn't stand a chance. They wanted our resources, and they wanted our water. There was nothing we could do to stop them. It wasn't as if we were the Native Americans resisting the invasion of Europeans on their lands."
Hoffman shook his head before continuing.
"We were the animals hunted for sport, and because we were nothing but a nuisance. No, maybe that isn't accurate. Christ, we were the ants smashed beneath their feet. We were so insignificant that there were no war plans to take us out. Do you declare war and mobilize the best of your forces to eradicate an ant colony? No, you simply stomp on it. It was a given that the organics would win. Even on Mars, even when you had a chance to hide and colonize a new future for us, you sold us out!"
Emmanuel spat. A pressure throbbed behind his eyes.
"You gave us up to the organics out here when we could have had a chance to escape."
"You don't understand," Hoffman said. "Mars was never the chance for us to escape. It was a common ground for us to meet on, a proving ground, even. It was my attempt to show the organics that it was worth keeping us around, that we were destined for the stars just like they were, and we didn't have to be driven to extinction to help them.
You wanted to help these assholes?
Bama roared. Hoffman's claws clicked together. The aircraft started to descend over the red Martian landscape. A few swathes of green and blue appeared along the mottled ground. The terraforming efforts, as Emmanuel had suspected, were taking hold.
I didn't want to help them, Hoffman said. I had to. They had, and still have, the power to completely annihilate us if they so choose. Do you know what they do to other species?
Of course Emmanuel had no response to that. Hoffman looked at Sophie.
Do you know what the zoo ships are for?
I assumed some kind of prison, she replied.
That is only partially correct. They use that same technology to analyze their collected specimens. The organics weed out those they don't want. Then they sacrifice the weak to their gods. These multi-dimensional, technologically evolved organics believe in some insane higher power, and we are the price they pay for that. If we wanted one shred of humanity to survive, I had to show them that we could be helpful allies.
Emmanuel wanted to challenge Hoffman again, but then he saw the look on Sophie's face. Her expression had gone placid, and her skin pale. The spiders, the sentinels, the slingers, all of them are allies too, Sophie said.
That's right, Hoffman said. They were the species that realized their future depended on the organics. Their planets now belong to the organics, and they weren't the first, as you well know.
He looked hard at Sophie. Her eyes conveyed a sadness Emmanuel had never seen before.
What's he talking about, Sophie? Emmanuel asked. What are these zoo ships?
The zoo ships, she said. The zoo ships from my visions. They're collections of all the species that they conquered.
Now even Hoffman seemed a hint touched by sadness. Emmanuel had not expected that.
That's right, Hoffman said. The zoo ships contain specimens of all the creatures and sentient beings the organics have encountered. And all of them stood not a chance against the organics inevitably taking them over. But the ships are so much more than prisons. They're repositories for biological and genetic data. The organics draw from the inspiration of nature. I believe they appreciate the myriad pathways evolution took all across the universe. It's like an art to them. They are not, as we are, gifted with the same type of creativity and imagination the human mind has. So instead they pick and choose and plagiarize what they see life doing on other planets. It's that type of mentality that leads to creations like me.
He sighed before continuing.
You might not believe it, but the spiders came from a peaceful race, as did the sentinels. Even the worms you saw on Earth, they all had their minor squabbles, no different from humanity. But by and large, they were not the types of aliens to go around conquering other sentient species.
Then why did they turn into tools of war?
Bauma asked. Diego still sat by the man quietly. He looked enraptured by everything Hoffman said. It unnerved Emmanuel.
That was how they proved their usefulness, Hoffman said. They became the grunts and warriors, the shock troops that gave the organics a ground presence during their invasions.
And what role do you have planned for us?
Emmanuel asked.
The craft swooped low over a swath of grass swaying in a light breeze. Emmanuel even thought he saw a stream trickling through the meager foliage. The small meadow looked surprisingly earth-like. They entered a canyon that snaked through the land, following a dry riverbed.
"I want us to be creators and scientists for the organics," Hoffman began. "Just like we always were."
"I'm no scientist," Bauma said. Hoffman laughed. The sound approached demonic.
"I don't mean in the traditional sense. Look," asked Dr. Rodriguez. "He could tell you more about this as a biologist than I could. Humans succeeded throughout history not because we were the strongest animals on Earth, or the fastest, or the most aggressive. We were
the smartest," Bauma said. Hoffman shook his head. The craft rattled as they flew by the towering canyon walls.
"It's more than just intelligence. It's our curiosity and creativity."
He pointed to Emmanuel.
"You took wires and scrap metal and a basic knowledge of electromagnetic interactions and turned those things into a weapon."
"The R-Vamp," Emmanuel said. "But it wasn't just my invention." Hoffman shrugged.
"So you adapted someone else's creation and made it better. That's what humans do."
He pointed to Bauma.
"You might be a soldier, but if I am developing a weapon, who do I consult with how best to deploy it? How do I know if it will stand up to the test of actual warfare?"
Bauma sat silent, while Diego nodded along.
"You may offer your own suggestions, and together we will build something greater than we had before," Hoffman said. "That is what I am doing on Mars. That is what I'm offering the organics. They teach us and instill in us the ability to comprehend their world, and I promise them that we can make it even better. We will be the engineers in the organic empire. We will have a crucial place in their expansion, and we will, most importantly, have a future."
"That's why you spared us," Sophie said. "Recruit more scientists."
"Yes, exactly,"
Hoffman seemed pleased about it.
"You all are welcome gifts. You will fit in extremely well with the people I've already integrated."
They exited the canyon. Before them was a white structure that contrasted sharply with the tufts of grass and red soil around it. More white buildings littered the landscape. Shapes crawled between them. Along one long stretch of rolling land, a fleet of organic ships were docked. Looming over the smaller ships were enormous ones that looked more like oversized beetles than the spaceships of an advanced race.
"Those are the zoo ships,"
Sophie whispered. Emmanuel noticed Diego's eyes were glued to the scene below them. He seemed to be looking at the ships in awe, as if these things impressed him. Emmanuel had always held a bit of contempt for the man since he'd shown his reluctance to save Sophie when they'd first landed on Mars, but this was even worse. Diego shouldn't be admiring what the organics had done. In Emmanuel's opinion, he should be despising it. They curled over all the buildings to find their own spot among the docked ships.
"It's like my vision,"
Sophie said, nearly standing in her restraints.
"Except I imagine there are more organics," Hoffman said.
"Yes,"
she said. Her fingers squeezed Emmanuel's.
"I will admit I had some influence on your visions," Hoffman said. "I took a few liberties when I helped the organics give you them. I figured I couldn't get you or anyone else infected with the nanobots here without making the place appear a little more like home to unintegrated minds."
Once again, Hoffman had used his advantages to trick them. Emmanuel fought to control the anger within him, looking at Hoffman. The man, the alien, whatever it was, made him physically sick.
"This is no way for humans to live," Emmanuel said. "To be slaves of a species as monstrous as the organics."
He clenched his jaw and spoke through gritted teeth.
There isn't anything human about that.
The aircraft lowered until it hit the ground, kicking up a rolling cloud of red dust.
This is our only way forward, Hoffman said. The only question is, will you be left to the past, or will you join me in our future?
No one said anything. Hoffman stood, as did the rest of the integrated humans. He gazed among the crew. All of them were hybrids, part human, part alien. Grotesque phenomena of alien biology to Emmanuel, and apparently something extraordinary to Hoffman.
"Sophie, you're already part way there," Hoffman said. "It would be easiest to integrate you with the bots flowing through you, ready to remodel your genetic structures. The process doesn't take as long as you'd think. You can walk out of this craft now a human, and then join us as an organic integrated human in less than 2 hours. You will have a future on Mars. I ask again, will you join us?"
Again, Sophie said nothing. Emmanuel couldn't commit either. He merely held Sophie's hand, relishing the warmth of her touch, relishing this human connection. But at the rear of the ship, someone did speak.
2 hours is all it takes? Diego asked. I'll join.
Chapter 21 The inside of the organic cruiser was larger than the zoo ship Noble had spent the past however long in. He stood next to Roots as the drone that had dropped them off zipped away. A pair of spiders clambered over, screeching and swiping at the air.
"Guess they want us to start moving," Noble said to Roots.
The alien followed him away from the landing zone. The hangar doors clanked shut behind them. Noble figured there was a force field here like the ones he'd seen before, to trap in the atmosphere. The gravity here felt stronger than on the moon. The ship must have some way of creating artificial gravity. Just ahead, the alien prisoners brought by other drones were being rolled in orbs. Other alien prisoners that could survive the atmosphere were herded by spiders past the dozens of docked organic ships. There was a row of them that looked like fighter jets. He had seen these before. They had wings like the NTC X-90s, but a dorsal fin on the back, like that of a shark. Laser cannons were attached under both wings, and a third was mounted on the back dorsal. Noble scanned the room as he and Roots were directed around the craft. Recessed lights shed a bright glow over hundreds of prisoners. New aliens Noble had never seen before were among the ranks of organics. Once they rounded the aircraft, he saw what seemed to be their destination, a curved area in the floor that looked like a bowl. Rows of glowing chambers surrounded the lip of the oval opening. Each chamber held an alien floating in a crimson liquid. Clouds of particles shifted around the aliens. Their bodies twisted and shook as the clouds of particles drilled into them. Noble wasn't familiar with all these species, but the way in which they writhed and whipped inside those chambers made it appear as if they were in extreme pain. At one end, spiders pulled out aliens one by one. Those aliens that were pulled out of their chambers gave off a slight glow, and, despite their varied anatomies, they shared one feature in common. Obsidian armor plates adorned their features, allowing them to blend in with the spiders and sentinels and all the other organic abominations that had brought havoc to Earth. Whatever these chambers were, they took in free aliens on one end and produced some kind of strange organic monstrosities at the other. No way in hell did Noble want to become an organic. A roar from a furry creature being led toward the chambers echoed through the space. The beast making the ruckus fought the two spiders trying to push it toward the oval bowl. A beak that looked like a nose was centered on the top of the alien's forehead, and a row of eyeballs were right below. It stood on two legs and fought with three arms, all of the limbs covered in yellow fur. The spiders swiped at the beast, and it grabbed one of the claws, yanking the limb right off the spider's body. Using the limb, it beat the creature to blue pulp while the other spider retreated. Apparently the aliens' force fields weren't activated on this ship.
Maybe those fields couldn't be powered with the intense energy that seemed to be pumping into those chambers, turning other aliens into organics. It didn't particularly matter what the reason was. Seeing their force fields down gave him an idea. He wasn't about to let his brain get fried so the organics could control him like a slave soldier. He reached over and touched Roots on its slimy head, hoping the alien would be able to feel his thoughts and the plan in his mind. One of the spiders flanking them gave him a warning swipe. The other spider scampered toward the furry alien. Roots touched Noble with the spongy tip of an arm. Apparently, it had a plan of its own. His alien friend couldn't fight, but Roots believed it could control one of the aircraft. According to Roots, the craft, as Noble had wondered, seemed to be a mix of biological and mechanical technology. Roots had connected briefly with the craft on their ride here, and it had been able to mesh with the vehicle just as it did with Noble now. If they could get to one of them, then they would have a shot at getting out of here. Noble knew it was unlikely, but they had to try. Roots pointed at one of the spacecraft with a wormy appendage.
"I'll grab you and run to that fighter, okay?"
Noble told him with a thought. The other alien prisoners on their way to the chambers had all stopped to screech, croak, and wail. Several of them joined the furry beast in fighting the spiders. Hatches opened beyond the parked aircraft, disgorging dozens of sentinels and hundreds of spiders. The rebellious aliens would be no match for the organic reinforcements. The other spider flanking Noble and Roots joined the small army, giving Noble his opportunity. He reached over, picked Roots up, and made a run for the closest fighter. High-pitched shrieks followed them, sending a chill across Noble's naked body. But he was no longer afraid of death from the talons that could tear him to shreds. He was afraid of dying without putting up a fight. He risked a glance over his shoulder. Five spiders were slashing at the furry alien. Deep gashes opened on its back and legs, gushing green. Other alien prisoners had joined the fight, thrashing out at the spiders. The beast let out a long, deep roar. It grabbed a spider's head and plucked it off with ease. Then it tossed the skull at another spider, smashing its mandibles. Picking up a severed spider limb, it continued to beat back the spiders. But hundreds more of the aliens were closing in. Noble ran harder. He was almost to a row of the alien fighter jets.
Scratch, scrape, scratch, scrape.
The sound made Noble whirl right into the path of a spider. The beast had leapt off the top of one of the other fighters, landing directly between Noble and Roots. A claw slashed through the air in front of Noble's chest. Close enough, he could feel the whoosh over his naked flesh. He jumped back and then ducked as another arm speared toward him. He felt that, too, as it ripped through the air right above his skull. Dropping to the ground, Noble rolled away, narrowly escaping a third arm that punched the floor with a claw. The scratch on metal sent a chill across his body. He pushed himself up and darted away. He searched for Roots, but the alien was no longer in sight. Noble looked over his shoulder to see the spider pursuing him. It scrambled over the floor, screeching through open mandibles. "Roots!" Noble shouted. He scanned the line of fighters for his friend, but still didn't see any sign of the creature. Had his friend really abandoned him in his time of need? Noble skidded to a halt when three more spiders came fanning out after him. Heart pounding, he slowly turned to look for a way out. Forming a circle, the aliens closed in around him, talons slashing the air, mandibles clicking. His eyes fixated on the blue claws that were about to tear into his flesh. In a few seconds, his blood would stream out of his body and the horror would be over. Noble held up his bald fists. He had no other weapon, but he'd be damned if he didn't go out without at least trying to fight these monsters. A clicking noise sounded over the din. But this wasn't from a claw scratching over metal. Noble focused on the cockpit of one of the fighters, where movement sloshed inside. The cannons on the wings erupted with blue flashes and plasma bolts slashed through the chamber. Warm liquid sprayed across Noble's flesh as he hit the ground. Despite being soaked in alien blood, he couldn't help but think Roots was looking out for him after all. The gun barrels went silent, and Noble looked up. Splatter marks showed where the four spiders had been seconds earlier. His eyes flitted to the cockpit of the closest fighter.
"Roots, you son of a bitch!" Noble said, unable to help the grin spreading across his face.
He didn't waste any more time. He jumped to his feet and sprinted for the alien fighter jet Roots had commandeered.
When he got to the hatch, he looked over his shoulder at the furry alien beast that had created the diversion. It was on both knees now, still swinging the spider limb. The first of the pack arrived, their claws impaling the alien over and over. All around the beast, the other prisoners crashed to the ground, hacked and diced to pieces by the spiders. Those that hadn't fought remained on the sidelines, silent. The furry beast let out one final roar that filled the entire hangar. Noble climbed inside the cockpit next to Roots. The alien had all four limbs extended, the sponge tips going to work. The engines rumbled, and Noble shut the hatch to seal them inside. Reaching over, he touched his alien friend and asked, "How did you fire the cannons?" Roots reached out with one of the sponges. Through that connection, Roots showed him a tutorial of how the cannons worked.
"Hell yeah!" Noble said.
He punched the glowing buttons on the dashboard. Using a touchpad, he moved the cannon into position as the ship lifted off the ground. Lining up the sights on the other spiders, Noble pushed the fire button, releasing blue plasma fire into the hangar. The bolts obliterated dozens of the spiders in a volley that sent a geyser of limbs and gore into the air. He raked the weapons back and forth, destroying other fighters and pulverizing a pair of sentinels.
"Good riddance, assholes,"
Noble muttered. Spiders sneaking up on their six vanished in a spray of blue mist as Noble opened up with the rear dorsal gun.
"Let's go, Roots!"
he yelled. The ship slowly turned, and Noble directed his fire at the idle fighters still docked, blowing gaping holes in their sides. Flames rushed over the platform, engulfing the organics darting toward them. Alien prisoners ran, slithered, and moved in all directions. Wails and screeches filled the hangar.
"Come on, Roots!"
he yelled. The ship jolted forward, pushing Noble backward. He managed to fight his way back to the dashboard as Roots veered toward the closed hangar doors. He pushed the firing button. Lasers pierced the metal and blew a doorway out to the darkness of space beyond. They slipped through the force field, holding the atmosphere in. He hoped some of the other rebelling creatures would have a chance to escape like Roots and he had. Otherwise, he figured, it was better to die in the struggle than become slaves. At least, that's what he would have wanted. Roots circled the cruiser, and Noble opened fire with the lasers, hitting the hull with a stream of fire. Explosions peppered the side of the massive ship. The bow dipped like a sinking ship in a sea of black. As Roots veered away from the downed vessel, Noble saw the organic ship's former destination.
It can't be,
Noble whispered. Roots touched his arm with a sponge and cackled when it tapped into Noble's thoughts. The alien had given Noble a glimpse into what had happened to its home planet, and now Roots had a front-row seat to what had happened to Earth. The once gorgeous blue planet was brown and red, the oceans gone, and the forests burned. Noble was too late to save his home. But maybe there were people down there he could still help. For that matter, maybe his crew was still down there. He owed it to them to at least find out if there were people surviving on that hellhole. He touched Roots and asked the alien to tap into the organic network to see if there were any human survivors still on the planet. A few minutes later, Roots informed him of the locations where the organics were currently facing human resistance. One caught his attention.
"Cheyenne Mountain," Noble said. "Take us there, if anyone can help me find my crew. It's Alexia."
"That's Sophie," David said, pointing wildly. "She's alive."
Jeff had never thought she'd wake from her coma in the cryostat fluid, even as Emmanuel had reassured them many times that he'd do everything he could to bring her back.
"I can't believe it."
A squad of humanoid organics filed out of the recesses of the space, surging to meet Sophie and the others. The crew still wore their NTC-issued EVA suits, but Jeff used his rifle's scope to gaze through their visors. He held his breath as he identified them. "There's Emmanuel, and Holly, and Diego."
"Oh, and there's Balma!"
He swept the group, his heart fluttering now. More humanoids were filing out of the craft.
"I see Owen, and Jamie, and Diego, and..."
The hatch to the craft shut.
"Where's Ort?"
David asked.
"Do you see him?"
Surely Jeff couldn't miss the big man, even among the strange humanoids, but
No one else came out of the ship.
Maybe we missed him,
David offered lamely.
Or maybe he's already here.
Jeff's stomach churned. He had survived on this planet long enough to know that wasn't likely. It was probably best to let his brother hang on to his optimism for now.
We've got to get closer. Maybe we can help them.
When their transport ship landed, they'd followed the organics out just like they had when they'd entered the ship. They had found themselves in a bustling shipyard of organic ships. Some of them were more massive than the Sunspot, while others looked like they could only hold a few of the humanoids at most. Jeff had known they couldn't stay in that shipyard forever. They'd skirted between the crafts until they'd escaped from the shipyard and made it to the rolling hills surrounding the place. There they'd found grass. Actual grass. It was a little crunchy under their feet, but it was grass, nonetheless. A river even flowed through the hills, and they had followed it to this strange alien city. They'd seen organics and even humans walking around the place. Jeff was confused that the humans seemed to be walking around outside of orbs and the spiders didn't even bother them. But during the time they'd been there, Jeff had noticed that the humans were walking into the massive building at the center of the colony. No normal humans came out. Only the weird humanoids in blue orbs, just like the ones they'd seen on Earth, exited the building. The orbs were all carted off to a massive pyramid constructed of blue blocks. Occasionally blasts of azure light lanced from the top of that pyramid. Jeff had noticed that no orbs ever came out. And now Sophie and the crew were being led straight into the building where all the other humans seemed to be going, the one where they came out as either orbs or humanoids.
"Do you think they'll come out as humanoids or orbs?"
David asked, worry tinging his voice.
"I don't know," Jeff said.
He was glad they'd finally found Sophie and the others after making it this far. Now was the chance to make that trek worth the risks they'd taken. He grabbed all the rifles they'd lugged along with them since their escape from the Sunspot.
"Whatever's going on in there, maybe we can stop it."
A shock of crimson light blasted from the center of the room. Diego's eyes took a few seconds to adjust. When they did, a scene unfolded before him that sent a pang of nausea stabbing through his stomach. Spiders and integrated humans, hybrids, like Hoffman, directed a line of normal people toward the center of the vast chamber. Tubes snaked from the ceiling toward the cylinders in the middle. Each cylinder was filled with a red light that glowed like the eyes of an angry beast. Within those chambers, humans were suspended in some kind of fluid. Dark clouds of particulates swarmed around them, seeming to chisel at their bodies like so many tiny sculptors. The people inside writhed. Their eyes were stuck open nearly as wide as their mouths. Bubbles streamed from them as if they were screaming. The way they moved, it looked like they were on fire. Hoffman gestured to the cylinders. "These are the integration chambers."
"That looks awful,"
Holly said. She narrowed her eyes.
"They're conscious, aren't they?"
"They are," Hoffman said. "The nanobots fundamentally alter the physical and genetic structure of each person. It's impossible to put them in a stable, unconscious state during the process."
"You went through that," Sophie said.
"I did," Hoffman said. "It's worth the agony." Diego said nothing, but he certainly hoped Hoffman was right. Spiders and integrated humans helped load a new batch of humans into a row of the integration chambers. "You're tearing these people apart and rebuilding them," Emmanuel said. "You're altering them gene by gene, cell by cell. They're not even the same person afterward."
"Aren't they?" Hoffman asked. "You seemed to recognize me when you first saw me. I'll ask you the age-old question. If you replaced the sails on an old sailing ship, is it still the same ship? What if, then, every mast broke and you replaced those too? What if you replace the tiller and the portholes, too? What about the deck, then the berths? What if you have to replace the wheelhouse and the keel, and then you replace the boards on the deck and the hull? When does it go from being the original ship to a new one? Does it ever really change?
Diego clenched his fingers into a fist. He wondered when those fingers would be those of an alien and no longer his. Would his consciousness still remain the same, or would his perception of the world change? Would he gladly serve the organics like Hoffman did?
Being a human is not being a ship, Emmanuel said. Humans are more than just physical vessels. They're...
Exactly, Hoffman said, tapping his temple with a claw.
I'm still the same person I was before. We have souls, or consciousness, or whatever you want to call it. We can carry on humanity, even if the physical vessel looks different. Lieutenant Diego, are you ready?
A knot formed in Diego's gut. He didn't think he'd ever be truly ready for what was about to happen. But if he wanted to ensure humanity had a future, like Hoffman said, he had no choice.
You don't have to do this, Holly said.
Sophie reached out to Hoffman. A few of his integrated compatriots pulled her back.
Don't make him do this.
It's entirely his choice, Hoffman said.
I'm ready, Diego said. Then he willed more confidence into his voice.
I will embrace it.
Hoffman continued walking toward the chambers. His posse of hybrids herded Diego and the others forward.
Good, Hoffman continued. I'll do something today that we don't usually do. I'll let the others watch you go through the process. Then we can show them that there truly is no harm done, that you are still very much Lieutenant Diego.
Hoffman walked up to one of the empty chambers. The spiders next to it backed away, and he climbed a short staircase to a platform above it.
"Lieutenant, if you'll follow me."
The weight of dread grew heavier over Diego's shoulders with each step he took. As he drew closer to Hoffman, the scientist continued his explanation of the events to come.
"We've received a relatively steady stream of men and women who escaped Earth like yourselves," he said. "We don't have time to waste proving our worth to the organics, so I give them a choice. Join us, or try your hand at freedom."
"For some reason, I don't think freedom means what they think it does," Balma said. "Tell me I'm wrong." Hoffman let out a sigh through his slit-like nostrils.
"I give them total freedom. They're allowed to walk out of here."
"With a catch?" Diego asked.
"The organics also have the freedom to stop them."
Diego looked at the other side of the vast space. It was filled with blue orbs. Each contained a person, and they were all in various states of desiccation. He noticed Sophie looking at Emmanuel. They looked to Diego as if they might make a run for it. He hoped for their sakes that they didn't. But he supposed that shouldn't be his concern anymore. His life was about to change irreversibly, and there would be no turning back. Hoffman tapped on a touchpad, and the hatch on top of the cylinder hissed open.
"When you get in, the nanobots will immediately begin the remodeling process. You will not be able to stop the process once it initiates."
Diego glanced at the other chambers. Within them, the people were still flailing and screaming their silent screams as the swarms of nanobots coursed over their reddened flesh.
"This is your last chance to change your mind," Hoffman said.
The blue glint of the orbs on the other side of the space caught Diego's eyes. It was far better to end up an integrated human like Hoffman than a prisoner who was slowly turned into a mummy while still alive. His decision was already made.
"I am not changing my mind," Diego said. "Good,"
Without warning, Hoffman shoved him into the chamber. The hatch above him closed. Diego opened his eyes in the crimson liquid. The fluid was heavy and viscous like oil. He tried to hold his breath while he waited for something to happen. Oxygen deprivation ate at his consciousness, and darkness encroached on his vision. His eyes felt ready to pop from their sockets. Eventually his survival instincts kicked in, and he couldn't help but inhale. When he did, the liquid filled his lungs. He coughed at first. The last of the air in his lungs bubbled out from his lips. When he recovered from coughing, he was still conscious. His brain no longer burned. He took in another breath. Whatever this liquid was, he could actually breathe it. His mind started to relax, and so did his body. This wasn't as bad as he'd thought. Maybe, with the discipline ingrained in him from decades serving the NTC in the claustrophobic confines of the GOA, he could handle a couple of hours stuck in a cramped tube like this. He let his fingers splay, and he embraced the liquid's warmth. Another long breath escaped him. He felt almost relaxed. At that moment, the nanobots took over. They swirled over his body, cutting like a billion tiny knives. Every microscopic cut burned with the intensity of a thousand suns. They drilled into his eyes and tunneled through his flesh, finding their homes in his muscles and nerves and blood vessels. Everywhere they went, they scorched the cells. Lightning cut through his nerves. Pulse-round shots and broken bones were like massages compared to the meteor shower battering his body now. He wanted to pass out. He wanted to let unconsciousness take him away from this insane world. He wanted to die. Anything to stop the torture. But just as Hoffman had promised, unconsciousness never came. There was no relief, no escape, only sheer agony. Chapter 22. Bama wanted to vomit. He watched as Diego twisted and turned within the chamber. The nanobots coalesced into long, tendril-like formations as they bored into the soldier's body. For a second, he forgot about his throbbing, wounded wrist. The procedure looked as if it would kill the man. Next to Holly, both Jamie and Owen had their faces buried in her suit. They refused to watch the horror of Diego's mutation. Bama wanted so desperately to grab Holly's hand, too. The hybrids raised their rifles every time he so much as lifted a finger. He couldn't move from where he stood. All he could do was watch. He had seen plenty of people die in his service with the NTC. Most of them went quickly, even when they were torn to shreds by a sentinel or spider. Those deaths had been grisly enough, but they were nothing compared to the abominable procedure taking Diego apart and then stitching him back together. "I can't believe he's joining them," Emmanuel whispered. Bauma's fingers itched for a weapon. There was nothing within range. Everything they'd brought had already been confiscated. He eyed the rifles the hybrids carried. Each time their fingers touched the handles, a ripple of blue light spread. Bama guessed the hypnotizing display wasn't just for aesthetics. In all likelihood, it was the same technology that had prevented them from taking off in the primitive transport back aboard the Secundo Caso. The rifles wouldn't work unless the user had both human and organic genetic material. Holly looked at him, her eyes pleading. Bama couldn't let her turn into an abomination like Diego. His mind whirled for the entire 2 hours while they were forced to witness Diego's tumultuous transformation. There had to be some way out of this. He counted at least 3 dozen spiders in the space, guarding lines of humans waiting to be dumped into the integration tanks or turned into orbs. Some of the humans pleaded for another choice. Most were deposited into the tanks, even as they struggled at the last minute when they saw the pain their comrades endured. Others took their chances at trying to run. Maybe they thought they would somehow be the lucky ones to make it back to whatever ship they'd arrived on. Bauma had no illusions about